May these be your words for your people this morning. Amen. So we are continuing on in our sermons, both about the story of Joseph, as came up in Scripture, and also learning miscellaneous facts about me. So the miscellaneous fact about me for the morning is that I, since I was 15 till I finished my first master's degree, was a swim teacher and a lifeguard. And so this is me. She is now in, like, high school. But I never swam competitively. I am not particularly fast, but I became a very good teacher. And I have taught all sorts of ages. And five-year-olds are one of my favorites because they're the ones that are too excited to, like, hold still to swim. They're my favorites to teach how to swim. But I've also taught adults how to swim, which is really rewarding. You don't have to trick adults into swimming like you do little kids, but you gotta work through a lot of other things. And I became a head lifeguard at the pool I worked at. I worked there for years and years, enough that I went to Camp Harlow for the first time this week, and I walked by their pool and was like, oh, they got a water slide and a diving. I wonder how deep it is. I wonder what their zones of coverage are. And I'm like, do not look at the pool. There's no one even in it. It's fine. Like, it's just so a part of now how I live that if I'm trying to enjoy being at a pool or a lake, I kind of have to not look at it if there's people in it. My pool manager was amazing, and we did a lot of in-service trainings. And we were started in high school, so that, like, going into an in-service in high school is, like, a big deal. And we would practice and practice and practice until we could act as a solid team under pressure. Because lifeguards always work in the team. This was interesting because since I worked there for years, and so did some of the other guards, the ones who'd worked there for years were really good. And then you'd get a brand new 15-year-old that put their swimsuit on inside out, and you were like, how did you even do that? And the thing was, the most experienced guards in those rooms, when you worked on the same shift, needed the newest guards. It's basically impossible to lifeguard an entire pool alone and perform a rescue alone. You could perform the rescue, or you could watch the rest of the pool if you were alone, but you can't do both. And if an emergency happens, one super competent and skilled guard isn't going to cut it. There are too many steps. Someone's got to jump. Even in the most basic rescues, the kid that, which I have had seen happen, the kid that floated away in their life jacket face up and then couldn't touch the ground again, and then were like, help me, I'm stuck, and the guard had to, like, go in and get them. Even for that rescue, the other lifeguard has to watch the rest to make sure nobody else is in trouble. So there's always two. And then if it's a serious rescue, you have to have someone call 911, you have to have somebody, like, crowd control, you have to have somebody else get first aid. It's not for one person. It doesn't matter how new the guard is, or how annoying you think they are, or how amazing the other guard is, or how strongly they've done it. It's not a, if you want something done right, do it yourself kind of activity. It can't be done. You cannot be a successful lifeguard if you do this mentality. You can only be successful if you work on a team, and the point is that everybody works together. Now, hopefully this is obvious to you. Hopefully you understand that there are seasons and times and activities that are meant for a team, for a unit to do things together. Basically, any sports team, even individual sports like track, they still have team scores. And any music group will fall into this category. I've played in music groups, and the most moving and beautiful music is always an ensemble. It's never a solo. It's meant to be done together. Sometimes it's... Last week we talked about how we all have the power to mess each other's plans up, which we do. But it's also true that sometimes we're the only reason somebody's plans can succeed. We are dependent on each other, whether we like it or not. And it can be important to remind ourselves of this because so much of our culture values that independence, that if you want something done right, do it yourself. Pull it up by your bootstraps. Both of these are posters available for you to order from Walmart or Amazon if you would like one. And that's the kind of culture we live in. If you want something done right, do it yourself. It's so important you can buy it as a poster. Highly individualized and competent people are valued and respected. It's a key to the American dream, making it on your own, succeeding on your own merit. But thinking back to my lifeguarding, I couldn't do any of those most complicated ones by myself. We needed each other. It didn't matter how much I wanted it to be done on my own. I wanted to be able to do it right and not work with a guard who I was like, what are you doing? We need each other. And a lot of our life activities fall into this way, especially the ones for the kingdom of God. We need each other whether we admit it or not. We're created for community, for togetherness. After all, God is three. So God is never even doing it all alone, let alone us. It doesn't matter how skilled or gifted or called you are, we need each other in order to thrive. The work of the kingdom of God is not meant for just one of us, and you can't do it yourself. My guess is that in that time between Pastor Steve and I, if any one of you had tried to do it by yourself or carried it all on your own, it would have been impossible. Even if maybe some of you wanted to just do your own part by yourself because everyone else was driving you bananas, you needed each other to make it work. And I want this idea that we are dependent on each other, that we need each other, even if we sometimes wish we were not, to be in our mind as we return to the story of Joseph. So last week we talked about how in order to actually get something done, we need to be on the same page and not be working counter to each other, which is what happened with Joseph and his brothers and his dad. They were all had different plans for how that meeting in the wilderness was going to go. They were all working towards different goals. None of them got what they thought they were hoping to get. So, this week, we still have power over each other's lives, but we need each other to succeed in our goals. Not only do we need to work together so we don't counteract each other, we actually need each other to make it work. It's not just we need to all be not working against each other, but we actually need to be working together. So let's return to Joseph. After selling Joseph, the brothers return to their dad and lie about it. Not always a great move. And Jacob falls into mourning for basically the rest of the book of Genesis. Joseph, meanwhile, is taken by slavers and sold into Egypt and bought by a man named Potiphar. Potiphar is a captain of the guard. We're not entirely sure what that means, but important man with a large household and lots of things going on in his life. So I can't imagine how scary this moment would have been for Joseph. He was young, 17-ish, far from home, no way to get back on his own. And since his, you know, sometimes family groups would like stage raids and come rescue you. But since it was his own family group that sold him into slavery, that option was not happening. No matter how talented or gifted or loved or self-sufficient Joseph was, he was stuck beyond his ability to fix it in a culture and a language he did not know. And he needed other people. And it sounds like Joseph is in a lot of trouble. But the text tells us, this is Genesis 39, 2 and 3, the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. He was in the house of his Egyptian master, and his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hands. This comes up a lot. The Lord was with Joseph. And because the Lord was with Joseph, the work Joseph was doing started to prosper and people started to notice. People started to join in. So researching the sermons, this interesting idea popped up for me. I'd never thought of it before. And the fact that Joseph in last week when he was sent out with his brothers, he was sent out to check on his brothers with the sheep. I'd always kind of assumed that was because he was the baby of the family and they like kept him home. And the older brothers went out with the sheep. And the one commentary I read said maybe not necessarily. What if it was instead that he was being trained for management of Jacob's household instead? If he was the favorite, which he was, and he was going to become the leader, he needed to know how to lead a large, mobile family group full of animals and people and tents and the whole thing. It would have taken training. So he may have been, like, apprenticing in management while his brothers were shepherding. And that seems like it's an interesting idea, maybe a possibility, because Joseph, as we find out, is exceptionally good at management once he gets into a place where he can manage. So if Joseph's ability to thrive and manage Potiphar's household and later interpret dreams, as he is famous for in these next chapters, when it says that the Lord is with Joseph, these could be interpreted as spiritual gifts of his, like the lists in Ephesians, of God gifting God's people for certain tasks in certain moments. Joseph, with the giftings God had given him, with God's presence, with God's help, with God's hope, is able to rise above what should have happened and keep rising. Working with other people in Potiphar's house, he's able to organize them into an efficient team that runs the household so well that Potiphar ignores them entirely. And actually, I didn't put this up, but the text says he only cared about what he ate. Like, he is not paying attention to his household at all, because Joseph is now so trusted and so talented and has such a good team around him that they are all thriving together. And this idea of the team is not in, it is not said that Joseph works with a team. But Joseph would not have been able to thrive in a household this large without other people working in it. There is a picture. This is a reproduction from a tomb of an Egyptian, just like everyday life of things. There's a lot of things going on in an important person's household. There's going to be all the guards and all the work that they needed to do. There's going to be food preparation. There's going to be clothes being cleaned. There's going to be keeping the house maintained. There's all of that. There's got to have been multiple staff. And if does not matter how good of a manager you are, if you don't have good staff, if they don't know what they're doing, you are not going to thrive. It's impossible to run a large household consistently with the want something done right, do it yourself mentality. If you've ever tried to host Thanksgiving dinner alone, you know this. Even if God and Joseph were to tag team the household, unless God stepped in every day and did miracles, which could have happened, Joseph would not have succeeded. He needed other people. But Joseph did succeed with God's presence, with Joseph's personal giftings and God-given talent, with the trust that was given to him by Potiphar, with everyone else who was working in this household. They all rose together. And as the leader, Joseph rose the highest. I think we're created for this kind of work. If you've ever been in a team that really works well together like this, there's nothing quite like it. When everybody is doing their own work, bringing it together into this one piece, all on the same goal, all on the same direction. It feels different to do that kind of work. The opposite of last week. Now, as a good manager, I assume Joseph had like visions and plans for what was coming next. Maybe staff schedules or, you know, saving for the next harvest or whatever it was. He probably thought he would stay with Potiphar indefinitely and was planning accordingly. And once again, that's not what happens. Joseph's plans and expectations once again got thwarted by other people's choices in his life, and he once again had no control over. Even a good team doesn't protect us from other people's choices. And this time it was Potiphar's wife, who is never named, just Potiphar's wife, and she wants Joseph. And she's used to getting what she wants. Joseph says no. She accuses him of sexual assault. He is thrown in jail. Probably never thought he was going to prison. Probably thought being sold into slavery in a foreign country by your brothers was as low as it was going to get. Joseph's ability to rise, to manage, to work where he was put, the fact that God was with him and helps him be successful, the trust he has in Potiphar, the trust Potiphar has in him, the team around him, doesn't protect him. And he once again needs somebody else's help. He is once again helpless in prison. And once again, the Lord is with Joseph and helps him to thrive. This is verses 21 to 23. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love. He gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. The chief jailer committed to Joseph's care all the prisoners who were in the prison. And whatever he was done there, he was the one who did it. The chief jailer paid no heed to anything that was in Joseph's care, because the Lord was with him and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. So now Joseph's in prison, technically prospering and caring and doing well with the giftings of God that God has given him, with God's presence with him, and Joseph still cannot get himself out. He cannot will himself, work himself out of prison. He needs help from someone else, and a very specific type of person. And people with power in the systems of Egypt, and with ears to Pharaoh. That's who he needs. And they actually show up in his prison. Eventually, Joseph is given this chance when two servants of Pharaoh, a cupbearer and a baker, show up. And he's working with them, and they have disturbing dreams. Through the gifts of God, Joseph interprets these dreams for them. And they turn out to be that the baker within 3 days will be killed, and the cupbearer in 3 days will return to his post as cupbearer to Pharaoh. And Joseph begs the cupbearer, "Remember me when it is well with you. Please do me the kindness to make mention of me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this place." And of course, the cupbearer forgets Joseph for 2 years. And there's nothing Joseph can do. He cannot pull himself up by his bootstraps. He cannot do it himself. He can only get so far. We can only get so far by himself with his own talents, his own competencies, God's presence with him. God, Joseph needs help. Joseph needs other people. If you're anything like me, this reality that we need each other sometimes it's fine, and sometimes it's a difficult pill to swallow. I don't mind working with people as a team. I like working with people as a team. I like to share my giftings. I like to see us all rise together. I do not like admitting that I need help from people. The difference there. My parents are laughing at me. I feel like, if I feel like I have nothing to give in exchange for your help, for needing help, that feels bad. I like to be independent and free and self-sufficient and looked at like I am capable and confident. And admitting when I need help and it cannot be done alone is hard. But admitting that I am stuck somewhere and my own work and my own talents and my own hopes and my own giftings cannot get me out, sometimes that can feel shameful. Shouldn't Jesus and my own work and talent be enough? Shouldn't my own giftings with Jesus' help get me out of this? And brothers and sisters, it is not enough, but it is not meant to be enough. We are not meant to do this alone. We are meant to do this together. Joseph needed so many people. He needed Potiphar and the prison jailer to see him. He needed and to trust him. He needed Potiphar's household to follow his directions. And he needed mostly a stranger to remember him and advocate for him. He couldn't do any of it alone, as gifted and talented and favored and special as he was. And we too need each other, especially when it comes to our real messy lives that we don't want to always admit to each other, especially if there's shame and fear and we cannot fix the mess we find ourselves in by our own choices or choices made by others around us. And God knows this. That's why we're one body. That's why we have that phrase we talked about last week from 1 Corinthians 12, where we work together. And it does mean admitting our need to each other. When was the last time that you acknowledged to yourself that you were stuck and need someone else? This season of moving, some of you are like, yep, it's happening to me right now. And some of you are like, it's been a long time. The season of moving between jobs reminded me once again, I'm not as self-sufficient as I would want. Most basically, I still cannot lift a couch by myself. But when was the last time you were honest with someone who was close to you about an emotional need of something you needed? Someone who is safe and confidential and knows you, where you shared your heart. It's important and holy work. Ecclesiastes tells us, it's not on the screen, I don't think. Two are better than one, for if they fall, one will lift up the other. We cannot lift each other up. We cannot work together if we stay independent, pulling ourselves up by our own bootstraps and doing it ourselves. we're meant to be together and do it for each other. Our gospel text this morning is from the Gospel of Luke. It's the story of Jesus sending out the 72 disciples. And this one is always hard for me because I don't like going out as unprepared as Jesus sends the disciples out. We're gonna read it in a second, so you don't have to read it quite yet. Jesus sends them out, you know, make sure I read it. Okay, when I travel, I need to know where I'm going. I need to know what hotel I'm staying in the night. I don't need the whole thing planned out, but I like to know where I'm sleeping. And if I'm like taking a bus, I'd like to know what number that bus is and kind of the basic schedule. I don't like going out without a plan. And I also I also tend to be an overpacker, even when I try not to be. I tend to bring more stuff than I wanted to, because what if I needed it? What if it rains? Anyway, so this story is hard for me because this starts at verse 3. Go on your way. I'm sending you out like lambs into the midst of wolves. So great. Carry no purse, no bag, no sandals, and greet no one on the road. Remain in the same house, eating and drinking whatever they provide, for the laborer deserves to be paid. Do not move about from house to house. Wherever you enter a town and its people welcome you, eat what is set before you. The way Jesus sends out his disciples is not how I would plan a trip, let alone plan a mission trip. I can't imagine that a mission or coordinator, organizer would be like, yeah, just go. It'll be fine. The disciples are so dependent when they leave on the people that are going to host them. But maybe that is the point, or at least one of the many points Jesus makes with this story. The disciples cannot do this ministry alone. Even the 72 disciples who are sent out by Jesus himself, powered by him to do this mission of sharing the gospel, cannot do it on their own personal strengths and giftings and call. They cannot pull themselves up by their bootstraps and succeed. Their own personal strengths and giftings and calling do not give them food in a particular town or make sure that they are met with a person of peace and hospitality. Even the guidance of the Lord supporting them is not enough for that. A person in each of those towns has to decide to accept the invitation and partner with the disciples and with Jesus. They have to join in. They have to do it together. The disciples, even with God's call, sending, and gifting, were not supposed to do the mission alone. It wasn't set up that way. The mission is set up so that people join in, because they have to join in for it to work. Sometimes it seems like it'd be easier if we could just do it all on our own, right? We organize all the thing, we work with the people we want to work with. Because when you work in a big group, in a team, communication takes a lot of work. It's a lot of time, it's a lot of compromising. Otherwise, we're all just going to wander away in different directions like last week's story, and nothing's going to get done. But we actually can do more together. And sometimes the systems and realities of our lives, we cannot change without someone else helping us. Sometimes you need a ride or a co-signer or someone to file paperwork in an embassy or a medical hospital so that things actually happen for you. And you can't make it happen, because we are not supposed to do this alone. This picture is called Church Ladies. And I just think it's so beautiful. Admitting that we need each other like this is hard, especially in a culture that values competency or family that is self-sufficient. It can be really hard in churches because we're really good at helping other people, but not always really good at admitting that I need the help this time. The help that we give being the help that we need. But we do need help. We are meant to do this together. No matter how strong or independent or gifted or spiritual or called we are, we need each other. And this is not shameful. This is good. This is how we were created to be. This is how Jesus intended it. So we're going to take a moment before our song of response to sit in silence for a second. It may be a little awkward. It will be okay. I want you to think about ways that people have come around you. Not ways you've come around other people, but ways people have come around you. When was the last time it happened And how did it feel? Is there something in your life that maybe you should say something to, something about that you haven't said, that could use a little help or a little prayer or a little, this is way beyond me, but I haven't told anyone? See if Jesus brings someone to mind who can help, because two are better than one. And God made us this way on purpose. Let us sit in silence. We're going to sit in silence for a second. Jesus, our friend, you made us for companionship, for life together. Bring us people who we can share our lives with, who can help us when we're stuck, who can encourage us when we're discouraged, who are willing to be vulnerable with so that we can do this life and this ministry together for your glory.